Training camp is underway, the rookie portion, that is, and had a chance to watch that today with, among the media buddies of mine, our good friend, great friend of the show, Scott Petrick from the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram. Scott, how you doing?
I'm good, Vic. How are you?
All right, good. Well, we watched these rookies perform. Give me your general takeaways.
Yeah, you know, it looks a lot like the rookie minicamps just because, you know, they're going through the same stuff. They're not in pads. But it was definitely a good opportunity to see Josh Gordon. I had not seen him definitely live, really hadn't seen him on film because he hadn't played in a year. So it was good to get my first impressions of him.
And the thing is, my first impression is, besides the fact that he's towering, mm-hmm. he's big, and much bigger than the other receivers yep. that were around him today. I mean, that was notable. The other part of it is he just looked like a very smooth athlete for his size. He does not look out of place for being as large as he is, tight end size, playing receiver.
No, you're right. Smooth, the word I would use too. You know, I thought early, running a couple routes, he didn't come out of the break that fast. And I thought, you know, that happens with tall guys and rookies. And by the end of practice, after listening to the coaches, I thought he was running pretty good routes. He showed good hands on one low ball on an out. And he seemed like he was listening to the coaches because he was getting coached up a lot. After every rep, somebody was in his ear, Shermer or Mike Wilson or Nolan Cromwell. So he seemed to take it, and it looked like he even got better as the practice went on.
You know, afterward, he was talking and asked a lot with the media and asked a lot about the off-field transgressions that led to his ending up in the supplemental draft where the Browns made him the second-round pick. And he seemed to be pretty upfront, mm-hmm. I think, in handling those questions. It didn't seem all that uncomfortable, and I guess reaching a point now where he knows he's got to confront that.
Yeah, and I think that's a difference. Maybe today's athlete, today's media is they're prepared to answer those questions. When you go to the combine, these guys get asked about every incident they had, and they've come up with an answer. But he did. He was forthright. He got asked directly if he failed a drug test at Utah, and he said yes. He said, I'm not the same person. I'm definitely a changed person. He said, I want to reciprocate the Browns for taking their chance on me. So, you know, it's a gamble that they took a guy with a checkered past. But you know the Browns did a lot of background search, and mm-hmm. they were convinced that he's not a bad kid and that he's over those issues. So they have to be right, but I kind of trust the fact that they did their research. Doesn't mean there won't be an issue ever again,
right.
But I know that they did a ton of research on the kid.
In watching him perform today, again, I saw a guy that certainly looks like he's still making that transition back to playing football, mm-hmm. to performing out on the field, because that isn't something he's done in a while. He's had time off. He looked to me like someone who was comfortable with most of what he was getting, and I'm sure there was limitations as to what they were throwing at him plays-wise. And then actually having the ball thrown to him, it never really seemed to me like he didn't feel like he was out of place as a pro, right? Sometimes, you mm-hmm. know, with a rookie, you get that sensation. I just saw like an inner confidence, I guess, if that's the right way to put it.
Yeah, he looks like he fits in on the NFL field. You know, and it'll be different when he's going one-on-one with Joe Hayden or when he's lined up next to Mo Mass, who's been in the league for 3 years. But he looked like he belonged. I did think it was interesting. He ran all the one-on-one kind of drills, but when they went a lot of, like, install, I think he stood back and watched the guys who've done it before because, you know, they're trying to put in plays or re-go over plays that they went through in minicamp and OTAs. So he's able to watch, okay, if I'm at the X, this is how I want to run that route.
Sure.
And that's the biggest thing for him to catch up is he's going to have to, within the next two and a half weeks, be able to line up wide and know what he's doing on 20 or 25 plays.
The other receiver that really, really jumped out too was Travis Benjamin. I thought he was much smoother, of course, than we had seen. He was progressively, he was getting smoother in the course of the off-season workouts, no doubt. But I thought today he looked like someone who really knew what he was doing, knew what was expected of him, and the routes were very crisp, the smoothness with just how he got the ball in stride and then turned it upfield and showed that great speed. But today it looked a lot more like he was a guy who felt like a pro versus a guy who had, I think, was really, really feeling his way and somewhat tentative in some of those early off-season workouts.
Oh, yeah, you're definitely right. And that's, I think it's important that you don't jump to conclusions. You know, I mean, there's fans are going to be come out Saturday and they see a guy one time for an hour, and you're, oh, man, that guy's not good or he's great.
Right, he's a Hall of Famer.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, we watched Benjamin in the rookie minicamp. You're like, oh, you know, he dropped a couple balls. Right. He, you know, he didn't blow you away right away. And like, yeah, he's fourth-round pick. I don't know if he's going to contribute. After watching him for 2 hours. Well, then as the offseason workouts went on, you saw him get more comfortable. You saw him get on top of just about any corner that tried to cover him.
Yes.
And he would catch the ball down the field. And I know that's one of the things the coaches like about him. Not only can he get by you, he can make those adjustments with his body to catch the deep ball, and that doesn't always happen with a lot of receivers, and he's an undersized guy too. So I think he has made strides, and you know that they expect both these guys to make contributions this year.
Scott Petrick from the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram covers the Browns, joining us here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. And, of course, the topic always will be until – Pat Shurmur names the starting quarterback, you know, who's going to be the guy. Yep. Again, I proceed as if there's little doubt that that will be Brandon Whedon. A lot of questions that were fired at Coach Shurmur today were along the lines of timing. You know, when's this going to happen? Everybody did their best, I guess, to pin him down.
Right.
He was very elusive. I thought he had his. I thought he showed good mobility.
He's in good shape. He lost
good shape. Yeah, sidestepping those questions, but not in a way that I think creates any drama at all. But I guess in the sense of just being logical. Like Colt McCoy was out there, as was Seneca Wallace. I mean, they were. It wasn't just the rookies at that position, and he made note of the fact that Colt and Seneca and Thad Lewis threw the ball a little better. He has seen improvement in them than on maybe some of the throws that especially Colt and Seneca made last year.
Yeah, and I think it's important. There's while the media, and I'm definitely one of the guys, wants to rush into a pronouncement. Brandon Whedon's your starter, and we're going to know it, and he's going to line up August 10th against Detroit. If I'm Pat Shurmur, I don't think I feel – that rush, because number one, what if Brandon Whedon gets hurt before then?
Right.
What if you name him the starter on July 29th and he gets hurt on July 30th? All you've done is kind of put Colt in an awkward situation, because now you're going to need Colt.
Right.
So there's one thing. Plus, you've never seen this guy in pads,
right,
up close as a coach.
Right.
So how do you name the guy, even though everybody expects him to, and I expect him to be the starter? I think you got to make him earn it a little bit, which means lining up in pads, which means going 11-11, some two-minute drills against the number one defense, and making sure that he's not overwhelmed, it's not too much for him, he has some success, and I would extend it that maybe that even means that first preseason game, you see him line up against an NFL defense that he's not familiar with, and make sure he moves the ball a little bit before you say, you know what, we're officially naming him the guy.
Yeah, I think you got to backstop yourself. I mean, I think as an organization, it makes perfect sense to not, as you say, lock this in until you're not only 100% sure from what you're talking about performing in pads, but also a shoe that might drop or have to drop with Colt McCoy.
Sure.
As far as moving him. And if you get that injury during the preseason, I mean, it could very well happen that Whedon's named the starter, you're halfway through, and then God forbid something happens to Whedon, and you've done something with McCoy, right, you've traded McCoy. Now you're potentially your starter becomes Seneca Wallace.
Yep.
And is that the bind that the Browns want to put themselves in? So I think keeping that as extending that process, I guess, as long as possible, that makes sense to me. Just so that you're backstopped, even if your plan fully is to go with Whedon.
I agree totally, and it's not like we're in one of those quarterback controversy/competitions. We all know Whedon's expected to win the job, and we know that he's going to get the majority of the first team snaps.
Right.
So I'm not sure what the quote-unquote uncertainty, what kind of negative impact it's having on this team. The whole team expects Whedon to win the job, so there's no distraction there.
Sure.
You know, there's no
sure
divide. So I just don't think we need to rush into it before the veterans even report.
What about just the overall look of this team in its performance in practice? I got the sense that guys generally were, and again, this is rookies. Mm-hmm. This is not the whole club, but I mean the rookies who were here, all but Josh Gordon's, who were here through offseason workouts. Just their sense of retaining what they were taught, maybe keeping their heads in it in the time off between the last offseason workout and today. I guess I like that. I like the sense that I didn't see what looked like a lot of the just dumb mistakes that you can often see rookies make and coaches, you know, climb all over.
Right. No, I'd agree with that. There was not a lot of let's re-huddle. You know, you saw it a couple times. but not a lot. You didn't hear any screaming, and there's coaches out there who scream when guys make mistakes, and I didn't hear any of that. You know, you saw, I think what you saw a little bit of, the rust, you saw some drop passes, you saw some throws that weren't perfect, and that's going to happen, you know, but the coaches don't like to see that when there's no defense, and that happened a couple times.
Right. Yeah.
But I think that happens your first practice, you get used to re-catching, you know, you get used to catching the ball again, you know, you get, Whedon throws it kind of hard. Whatever, I thought those were the biggest mistakes I saw, but they weren't the mental ones.
Mm-mm.
And I think that's what the coaches want to see. And as Pat Shurmur talked about, last year at this time, he hadn't had an offseason with anybody.
Right.
So he feels way ahead of where they were last year. And that's good because, you know, last year he was starting from square one.
And I guess it leads to just a general sense of optimism, at least that I have, once the entire squad is on the field on Friday, that if today was any indication, when we get this whole team together working, which is their next time they're together, is Friday, you would expect the veterans, their experience, plus what looks like was well retained by the receivers, will mesh together and, you know, show you some progress overall, this football team, that it has made significant strides since a year ago.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think coaching plays a huge part in that. You know, they added Brad Childress, and he helped settle things down on offense. Nolan Cromwell does the same thing, as a fiery guy who has a lot of experience. You know, and they have a really experienced coaching staff. I think that gets overlooked sometimes.
Right.
Not only do you have, you know, Mike Holmgren on the sideline, Gil Haskell's around, Ray Rhodes is around, Dick Duran's a former head coach, Brad Childress is a former head coach. So you get a lot of guys who know what they're doing. The practice runs smoothly. And I think the second thing you need is quarterbacks who know what they're doing and run the right plays. And we know Colt McCoy's smart, and he has a grasp of the offense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Whedon does, and I think he showed it. And he said he doesn't even have to be in the playbook as much now because it's not quite second nature to him yet, but he knows what he's doing, and he knows how to finish a play. If Childress starts it, he can finish it. So I think if you get the coaching and the quarterback know what they're doing, it goes a long way with making sure practice runs smoothly.
No, you're right. Strong, strong teachers on this coaching staff. Scott, thank you so much.
Anytime, Vic.
He is Scott Petrick from the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram, covering the Browns and joining us here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. You're listening to ESPN 850 WKNR.